So, can I take you to your evidence, please, paragraph 6.3. You might not need it, but it just doesn't matter. What's the difference between a line and a cable?
Essentially, when we refer to line in here, we're talking about overhead conductor. When we're talking about cable...
An overhead piece of wire.
Yes.
Yep.
And when we're talking about cable, we're talking about underground.
Right. So, in terms of the protection to the... that's being sought in terms of the sub-transmission and the other bits to make a rural and all that, some of that stuff's actually underground.
In fact, looking at this, I think the two big sections of underground, I think there's about 4.5 kilometres of cable between Wanaka and the Treble Cone, so on that section. And I think the other major section of cable was on the Camp Hill substation to Makarora.
So if we go back to page three, where you've got the description of the part that you're seeking for the corridor, it's just some of that 147 that's underground.
So that actually refers to just the way we tend to classify our sub-transmission. So basically what we're looking at there is 147 kilometres of overhead.
Right. And the next one is 116 overhead. So is it only the 9 that's actual cable?
Yes.
Okay. So just on your summary, that table on the last page of your summary, you've got separated there. Do I take it that where you've got 6.6/11 kV?
Again, that is a.
That's underground and overhead.
Yeah. So yes, 6.6/11 kV lines. I mean, 6.6/11 kV cable.
Yeah.
So the 6.6/11 kV is just a classification that we commonly use in our asset management plans and for ComCom reporting purposes.
So it's only that 9 cases in terms of the protection you're seeking. It's only 9 cases that's underground.
Yes, so most of this will be in what we term siphons, so where we've gone from overhead to underground or vice versa for small sections.
So my follow-on question is, given that some of it's underground and some of it's overground, how does the protection you're seeking, this might be more to start, how does the protection you're seeking, is that changed at all in terms of some of it being overhead and underground?
I guess it's an interesting one dealing with it personally. The legislation and controls in place around underground services is quite minimal at this stage. So ECP 34 is centred around overhead lines. But if anything, being aware that we have a critical underground circuit there means that they can apply for a close approach. They're not going to compromise any underground assets and obviously just start digging and risk safety effectively. So, there isn't any specific requirements around underground services in ECP 34, but there is sort of triggers within our company that ensure safety.
But in terms of the provisions you're looking to put in the district plan, is there anything different that needs to be done for those in regard to it, with the lines overhead or underground?
No, it's just to make people aware that they're there.
Are they on private land, those tables, or are they on road reserve?
will depend.
Well, there's only 6 kilometres.
Nine roads. To tell you the truth, I don't know off the top of my head, but if you so desire, I can find out for you.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it's an issue.
Does your map, the map that's included in your submission, is that map able to show which bits are?
We can't. On the maps that were formed part of the submission, it showed just in different colours and by different relations. If there's a solid line, it was overhead, and if it's a dashed line, it's underground.
And is that the legend?
I don't know.
In terms of the turning to 7.4 and 7.6, this is about the having statutory easement or existing use protection. How much of the network is protected in that manner, and therefore how much of it isn't?
Do you have a feel for that number, Joanne?
I did do a response for a previous hearing. So most of our lines, apart from lines coming into one, that would be pre-1992.
Right.
So, yeah, we would have very limited elements of them that would have easements.
Right.
But then 50% of them would be in the road corridor.
I'm just looking at the map you provided on attached to a submission and for Wanaka, and the line going out to Matuhituhi, Kukone, seems to end or begin somewhere around presently at a Lone Star restaurant and not connect to the network. And I just wonder if that was intentional.
No, it's that line does come from the Wanaka substation on Valentine Road.
Mm.
So there.
I have the advantage of on my computer, I can expand it, you see. It ceases before you. It doesn't commence until west of Cadrona Valley Road. Some distance west of it, actually.
Okay. I guess it's probably an omission there. The thing to note is that we've given you what we call the main trunk of the line. So there will be small spurs, we call them, off the side of those lines as you carry on.
Yeah.
And they will feed separate transformers and therefore a much smaller number of customers. So what we're showing you is the main trunk and therefore the critical section that supplies to all those key customers.
We can supply more detailed maps directly off our GIS if that's required as well.
Well, maybe what it is, I see now there's a black dotted line, a black dashed line, maybe the black dashed line is the cable. Would you like to have a look at this?
Yeah, just bring in the fan on here.
Yeah, and expand it.
I'm relatively sure it is cable in the Wanaka.
Yeah.
Wanaka urban area, mm-hmm. and then goes out to overhead once it leaves the urban boundary.
Yeah. Cut through there. Mm-hmm. And there's a cable right here. Far horizons. That explains it. So that answers the question about that area of underground.
Yeah.
Within the urban area.
And what that's sort of emphasising is that within the urban area where we have rings, that just between the Wanaka sub and the edge of that urban area is less critical as we can feed it different directions. But once you pass that, you're in the rural area, and therefore it's a single circuit all the way out.
I suppose that raises the question I asked. And maybe I didn't ask it properly in the subdivision hearing. The two lines coming in from Cromwell. One goes along Valentine Road to the substation. Mm-hmm. The other one cuts through three parks. Will the one through three parks be moved in relation to the development in three parks, or will that always remain in that position? Because that
is definitely the plan to remove it. Mm-hmm. And we are working through that at the moment. It's not driven by the desire of the line to be moved by the developer. Mm-hmm. It's been driven by our development in the area.
With your new substation, then?
Yeah, Riverbank Road, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't it, this, whatever goes into this plan is not going to have any, even if we were to agree with everything you said, it's not going to have any effect until, at a minimum, this time next year.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any alteration to that map likely to occur in that time?
I would think so. But with regard to that small section, you can see that we need to divert it down Riverbank Road towards the site that we've designated. And that already is a 33 line corridor as it stands.
Mm. Yes,
so effectively we're covering.
Line goes up.
Yep. So we are sort of two birds, one stone with that small section. So I guess, yes, there is a small issue there in terms of getting that bit across the subdivision removed.
Yeah, I was going to delve into the Lady's Mouth trees, but I might just leave that alone for a bit. Yeah, all good.
I see, I'm just looking at the maps in the Waitaki Basin. I see there's a dashed green line along, I think it's Mactanola, adjoining Arrowtown. Is that indicating cable as well, is it?
Sorry, where are you?
Arrowtown.
So they would be talking about the Arrowtown room?
Yes,
33. It's north of the substation at Arrowtown, or the zone substation.
Yes, so that is 33 cable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, if that's helpful.
Some of the issues that I've raised in my summary have already been addressed.
Okay.
And I won't traverse them by reading out what I have, but happy to take any further questions.
Okay, that's fine.
Just in terms of your timing. I started at paragraph 2, just in the summary. Again, it's just to reiterate that the reliefs of Iowa did fall within two categories. Relief to enable an efficient and effective management of its whole network, including protection of its assets from adverse effects, including first sensitivity effects associated with land uses and activities, and appropriate management of potential adverse effects of Aurora's network, taking into consideration the specific locational, technical, and operational requirements of the network. And as we've discussed again this morning, the relief to protect critical electricity lines. At paragraph 3, in terms of relief to enable the efficient and effective management of the whole network, I have outlined in my evidence in chief the recommended changes to objectives, policies, definitions, rules and assessment manners which I consider appropriate. These are included within attachment B to my evidence but include amendment to objective 30.2.5 and inclusion of a new policy 3254, which seeks to recognise the positive social, economic, cultural and environmental benefits of utilities. B, amendments to policy 3262 to recognise the locational, technical and operational requirements of utilities and benefits associated with utilities. And C, recognition within the proposed plan of the requirement to comply with the Electricity Hazard and Trade Regulations 2003. And the amendments recommended to an inclusion of the following definitions of utility, electricity sub-transmission corridor, electricity distribution, reasonably significant infrastructure, support structure and sensitive activities. In my view, the proposed changes are appropriate and will address the imbalance in the notified provisions. There are a number of areas where I have remained to have some concern. I have addressed these issues in depth in my evidence in chief, but list of provisions of concern below. We have already discussed this morning the issue around Rule 34.6 for non-renewable electricity generation. We've also discussed 34.11, new lines and support structures and definition of minor upgrading. In terms of 34.11, new lines and support structures, matters of control, where we have touched on the issue of the visual appearance, matter of control. The other issue that we haven't touched on was the requirement for a natural hazards assessment for all new lines and support structures, which in my view is overly onerous and has the potential to cause significant delays in Aurora's network utility activities. And in my view, infrastructure providers such as Aurora are in the best position to assess the risks of locating network utility structures involving non-habitable buildings in potential hazard areas in terms of continuity of electricity services and the reliability of its network.
I'll just interrupt on that point. I raised with the officers and it may not have been picked up in the recording, but that provision didn't actually achieve what I suspect the officers meant, which was that in circumstances where there was a natural hazard, they would like that to be addressed, but
yep,
that's different from requiring it in every circumstance.
I did hear the discussion in terms of possibly having it as a standard, or a zone, utility standard, sorry.
Yes.
But I think requiring it for every controlled activity I thought was just, going to be overly onerous. Just shifting on to the next page, just in terms of Rule 34.18, buildings associated with a utility. As currently drafted, Rule 34.18 will require discretionary activity resource consent for relatively small-scale electricity distribution assets, such as distribution cabinets and kiosks in significant natural areas, the Arrowtown Historic Management Zone and the Remarkables Park Zone. In my view, many of these structures are small-scale in nature and as such should be exempt from this rule. And in instances where consent is required, the default consent status should be amended to a controlled activity rather than discretionary to ensure that certainty can be provided to utility operators. We also did have some discussion around height associated with Rule 35.8, so again, I won't just continue there. And in terms of critical electricity lines, in my opinion, it is appropriate that the proposed plan contains a policy and rule framework to protect the integrity of the high voltage and critical distribution lines identified in the Aurora submission, and their ability to provide the safe, secure and efficient supply of electricity. In my view, such measures will protect distribution infrastructure against land uses and development effects, i.e. reverse sensitivity, that have the potential to compromise its operation. The operative plan currently fails to adequately protect such critical infrastructure, i.e. lines less than 100 kV, with the result being that developments have the potential to be consented without input from the affected asset owner. The high voltage assets and critical electricity lines owned by Aurora are not covered by the National Environmental Standards for Electricity Transmission Activities, nor any other environmental standard. Hence, protection of such infrastructure is best provided through the proposed plan review process currently being undertaken. The Section 42A report officer has recommended that Aurora's 6633 kV assets should be recognised and provided for as regionally significant and protection provided for such assets within the proposed plan. In my view, this is appropriate and is supported. However, as I outlined in my evidence in chief, there's some areas where I hold concern, particularly in relation to the exclusion of the Wanaka to Maparoa 11 kV line from the definition. The proposed reduction in setback requirements for subdivision, which would not comply with NZECP 34 requirements, and the proposed activity status for non-compliance defaulting to non-compliance.
Most of my questions have been answered. I just have one though, just in terms of looking at the structure of the evidence, and that it seems to be talking about the protection of the assets and focused on that. When I read the National Policy Statement on the Electricity Transmission, that talks about is the management of the adverse effects of other activities on the network. It also talks about managing the adverse environmental effects of the network itself. That I haven't seen any of that component of it in here. Why is that?
I suppose because there are other rules provided either in the rural chapters and possibly in the utility chapter also that would address potential effects of utilities on activities. So I haven't actually put any focus on it in my evidence.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
First thing, we discussed for lunch the possibility of there being some time limit on backup generation. Are you able to?
Yes, so 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
The only other concern, obviously, we had was just in relation to the activity status for anything that was required for longer periods, such as the ones for Menotti, and whether that the activity status could either become restricted, discretionary, or controlled.
Just looking at your evidence, page 3, you talk about corridor protection meters, pop them in a number of district claims around New Zealand. Are you able to give us examples of claims where they are?
I can. What I did bring with me, and I didn't include it in my evidence, was a consent order that is the basis that we've used for our provisions, which was for North Power of Whangarei. So they're actually operative. And I can provide that to you for your information. The other electricity distribution companies that are currently seeking similar provisions are Orion in Christchurch, Main Power in Hurunui, Waimakariri and Kaikoura. Wellington Electricity have been looking at similar provisions. North Power obviously held in Whangarei, and also I think it's Kaitaia is within their area. So
Kaitaia is part of Whangarei District. Mm-hmm. So Whangarei District is north of Whangarei.
Right.
Yeah. I went to intermediate school in Kaitaia, I know reasonably well.
So it certainly is something that the electricity distribution companies are actively pursuing as district plan reviews are now coming up. But the North Power example that I provided are operative and have been for a number of years.
Okay, thank you. it's in your summary as well, but I have that question up on the page as well. When you're dealing with this issue of cabinets or kiosks in significant natural areas in the Arrowtown Historic Management Zone, the Remarkables Park Zone is not part of the proposed district plan at present, and all going well, it won't be.
All springs eternal.
If we take that out,
yep.
And I can understand Aurora's concern in such a large area as Remarkables Park Zone,
yep.
Is there a real concern with it in significant natural areas?
Not particularly the significant natural areas, but certainly in Arrowtown,
significant natural areas, it is not a problem, is that?
I don't really have a good overview of the extent of the significant natural areas, but refer to the size,
I'm actually meaning the planning sense, given that significant natural areas are a Section 6 matter of national importance. And so the question is whether that national importance is more important than Aurora's right to without any
And I agree that it is appropriate that provision, that consenting process is appropriate in protected areas. I suppose my concern really is it's discretionary privilege for something that size.
My second question, of course, was with the Arrowtown Historic Management Area. Again, in large part, it is just a heritage matter. Whether it's inappropriate for the council to seek some sort of control over design of on-street utilities.
I suppose where I was trying to get was for these really tiny structures. I wasn't looking for provision for all of them because, again, some of the distribution cabinets are quite significant.
I understand the ones that each property owner has outside their gate. The ones beyond that.
Yeah, the ones beyond that, I understand a consenting requirement would be appropriate, but I think for the ones that I have outlined, probably the cabinets, but my evidence identifies the various sizes, and potentially if a size limit was put on it, provided for the tiny ones, that potentially would address that.
That's good. Thank you. So clarifying.
Thank you.
bringing up your submissions so that I can hold you to it.
Of course. Yes.
Yes, we do.
Thank you. Just to summarise, what I have submitted is that there could be progressive undergrounding of lines, and I'm just dealing with the Wanaka area. And I note that opposed have been Spark, Vodafone and Chorus. I observe that I wouldn't regard them as the main concerns as far as overhead lines go. They seem to have been quite sensitive in having progressive undergrounding and not too noticeable on poles. I note there's no submission by those that I regard as the those of most concern: Aurora, Panet, Transpower and 2 Degrees. And there appears to be an acknowledgement that something is required to try and to minimise, if not totally avoid, the adverse effects. And that's in the objective, that's in 30.2.7 of the proposed plan. And then that following from that, there's a requirement for undergrounding in new areas, and the encouragement for undergrounding, for replacement or upgrading. And then consistent with that is the section 42A report, and at page 15 there's reference there to a proposed new rule that would permit outright undergrounding of poles and lines. And the reference there in relation to that further rule is that it would encourage undergrounding, which reduces the adverse visual effects associated with overhead lines and masts and protect the district's valued landscapes. So on that basis, I submit that the council's officer, in relation to that report, is acknowledging or supporting my submission. I am a little bit surprised that the report doesn't go further, and it seems to be on the basis that overhead lines, this is at page 49 of the 42A report, overhead lines in urban areas are considered to be a normal and expected sight. I say I have a real reservation about that. In Wanaka, each time you drive through here to Edgewater, and that's a subdivision I think goes back probably into the 1970s, it's totally underground, as is everything subsequent in Wanaka, and you only have to have regard to the major areas that have been developed since Meadowstone, all out towards the Beacon Point end there, Peninsula Bay, Coromico now, all of that. The earlier subdivision in the Hunter Crescent, which I think also 1970s or early 1980s, most of Albert Town itself, and so on it goes. And I say that I have a real issue with that part of the report, as I see it, it's now expected that everything will be underground. Not that you'd expect it the other way around. However, and it just may be that the writer of the report hadn't quite noticed as much as those that live in Wanaka directly how much has gone underground. What I take particular issue with is that in the established areas, which my submission is aimed at, there have been an increasing number of lines put up to service those areas where the lines are all going underground. So to get to the new areas where everything's underground, the established areas have further poles, higher poles to put more lines on, and following from that, additional lines.
And it's very it's not only the additional lines and higher poles, but they've made it so untidy. The photos, I appreciate, don't illustrate it as well as they could. I've made a number of attempts. One particular pole there, it not only has the increased height, it's a very ugly pole. I mean, you couldn't have a rougher looking pole if you tried to manufacture one. It has different coloured wires on it. It has different coloured conduits coming down the side of it. It has an unused wire that's left on it. And this is not untypical of what's happening. If there'd been a better attempt to try and tidy up what's going on, and then you get the location that I'm particularly illustrating there, where something like 30 wires, plus 30 wires, can be observed, it's like a hub, and de facto almost substation operating there in terms of the orientation of all the lines that go into the different areas. So I say there's this now major inconsistency between where lines are going in and where they've been allowed to stay out. Another illustration, if you were to wish to take views, you drive down Plantation Road, all the new area, well, not so new now, up in the Anderson Road area, the commercial area. Lovely view as you drive down Plantation Road. That was subdivision in the late 1980s. No lines, and then all of a sudden you hit the established area and you've got all these ugly, various poles, different heights, different colours, some concrete, as I say, some wood, and so on. It's just time, in my submission, for those that have the opportunity to make money out of this environment by running their profitable, obviously, businesses, to actually balance the ledger to some extent and say, okay, we accept that what we're doing is visually has adverse effects, and it's time for us to do something about it. Now, I don't know exactly the legal position, because that's been raised by Chorus and Spark and Vodafone, but that's something, my submission, that's something that they need to take issue with if this panel is so minded to say it's time to actually step a bit further and start tidying up the established areas and get away from the contradictions. I mean, there are so many rules and regulations about avoiding or minimising adverse effects. It makes it quite hypocritical to see what's going on. I suppose what really rankles a bit is when you get Aurora as the prime concern in this area, doing what they do to make money, which is all taken off to another district altogether. If they were making money that came into the Wanaka QLEC district, it might be a little more, you might have a little more acceptance of it. But the fact that it only benefits Dunedin ratepayers is something that probably just adds to the concern about how cavalier they seem to be. So I say they're taking advantage of an economic opportunity, but at the same time, they are not endeavouring to balance that up by being sensitive to the environment that they are having adverse effects on. Certainly in my opinion, my submission, it's well overdue for a correction. And even if they went as far as when there is a replacement or an upgrading, to have consulted, but they don't even bother to do that. And I can use as a direct example